Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to WPR Rebuttal, covering the sides of the story missed by Wisconsin Public Radio, bringing you narratives the UW System Board of Regents won't allow, and shedding light on perspectives the owners of WPR don't want you to hear. I'm Senator JPO, your host. Our call number is 929-477-3965. And as advertised for the past few weeks, our huge topic today is the merits and, well, the lack thereof for the liberal arts education, as articulated by the winners and some runners-up of the SAGLA scholarship competition. So I'm going to my notes here because this can get very highly detailed. But so the University of Wisconsin system, also known as UW system, for about 11 years held a liberal arts scholarship essay competition. And there's this separate quasi-autonomous board of judges. And I'm looking for the acronym here. Okay, so within the UW system, there is something that is called the System Advisory Group on Liberal Arts. And that's the SAGLA, which I'll hear and pronounce as SAGLA. Just that you're aware of the acronyms are coming up in reviewing the competition. And what happened is this UW-SAGLA had the idea to go and invite students to write essays explaining a different topic. And this year happened to be a favorite topic of mine, and it's about the relative value or lack thereof of a liberal arts education. So, of course, this being the final year, we had three winners of $2,000 each, and we had three runners-up mentioned in the press release. And just one of the things real quickly about the cost of administering this competition is, besides the $6,000 in money given, because I found nothing that said that the runners-up received anything. If they did, they're welcome to call and correct me. From the documentation, it appears the only prize money was the $2,000 times three, so $6,000 in the prize pot. But also, of course, the SAGLA judges spent who knows how many hours sifting through the applications. And in all fairness, actually, administration costs were spread amongst all the campuses that nominated essayists. So amongst the UW colleges, each of the 13 two-year schools could nominate one essayist. And, of course, they had probably dozens of applications at each school. So you look at the time, maybe 5 minutes on each application. So you add up all the time, a few hours here, a few hours there, and the hourly wage for one of those clerical workers is probably $14, $15. So it really adds up. The administrative cost of judging probably approached the cost of the prize money. So I'm saying like $12,000 a year to actually run and award the scholarship money, because half the cost is just the labor in conducting the competition. So that's been established as to the public relations benefit. In accounting world, they call this goodwill, where it's essentially the amount of money that you can rip someone off for before they abandon you as a customer. And at least that's the way I look at it, because it's not actually as well-defined in the accounting world, but that's my working definition, because when I worked at Pizza Hut years ago, I reckoned that there was only so much you could do in terms of costing a customer lost time and money. Just like there is with a disgruntled graduate who may have been an educational advocate earlier in life, but now he's a higher education critic. Well, it's kind of similar to someone ordering a pizza. If the pizza is late, it's cold, and it's the wrong toppings, and even like a soggier crust than you want, then of course, why would you go back to that pizza place? And similarly, if the education is much delayed in conferring a wage premium, and you don't see any wage premium for the first 5 to 10 years after you graduate, well, why would you go back to that university system, right? So at any rate, that's what motivated me to go and examine these SAGLA scholarship winners, most notably their essays, and just point by point, where appropriate, identify common ground as well as where I disagree. You know, my promotional materials emphasize the disagreement, but now and then I do find some common ground, and I'll be sure to identify that when we come upon it. But anyone just tuning in, this is WPR Rebuttal. I'm Senator JPO, the host, about to dig into the SAGLA scholarship winners. And if you want to call in and talk about this topic, our number is 929-477-3965. Yeah, it's hosted in California, but that's where all the blog talk radio stuff is hosted, more or less, in the Los Angeles area. So, first up, how do they determine the winners? Well, I'm looking at the press release from the UW System Administration website, and they had a set of ground rules. And, okay, so, let's see here. So many notes here. It's tough to keep it straight. Okay, so proclamation page. Announcing the 11th Annual 2015 through 2016 Liberal Arts Essay Scholarship Competition, and it linked to the application materials. So, of course, what applicants had to do is look at the application packet, which was not actually an application form. The application packet was just a double-sided sheet of paper that had the instructions. So the instructions were to go and write an op-ed, and it need not be published, but just in the style of an op-ed, because I did not see any paper that published the op-eds of the winners or runners-up. And if any of you have seen it, then please let me know in the comments section, because I'll have this up on my WPR-Rebel.com blog. I'll have the notes up, and you can comment in the section and even link to the published op-ed if any of these winners have been published. But just when I was doing an internet search, nothing came up as to a newspaper that had published any of the winning or runners-up op-eds for its competition here. So the topic has been established. You must go and kind of compare and contrast education for jobs that are already here versus education for jobs that might never be here. That's not really the way they phrased it, but really, when you prepare for jobs that aren't here, reality is those jobs might never be here. Like, and even if they are in the early theoretical stages, such as like creating carbon nanotubes to send stuff to and from the moon, right? Well, there aren't any jobs like a carbon tube transport engineer, not like that. And you do have a few jobs like repair technician for these self-service kiosks at Wendy's and other restaurants, but those jobs are not numerous yet. So in other words, if you choose a liberal arts education, you are choosing to defer your earnings because you're not in the full-time workforce right away. And you're not preparing for any type of job where you can hit the ground running with already like some experience, barring the few instances in which you're allowed to have enough internships. But those are beyond the scope of liberal arts. Those are more applied education and more closely aligned with vocational technical mission. And the essays are about liberal arts. So I'll stick to the liberal arts section of PI right now. And, okay, so the essays had to be submitted to the particular student's campus. Okay, so once they're submitted to campus, then the campus had by February 13th to send their nominations. And if you weren't nominated by your campus, then you're just dumb out of luck. You're DOL, dumb out of luck, because, you know, if the campus representative didn't like you for a reason and they just did not nominate you, then why recommend is in the comments section, go and post a link, blog your non-winning essay, okay, and I will allow you to post a link to your blog formatted essay. Or you can, if you don't want to create a blog to post your non-winning essay, you can go ahead and just post and paste the entire thing right in the comments section, WPR Rebuttal. That'd be very cool. Okay, so first up, the first $2,000 award winner is, oh, what's his name? I'm scrolling through all these notes. Good grief. I mean, for this half-hour window, I'll probably have to be more selective as to what I actually speak, and because I'm going to have a ton of notes to go on the page. So, okay, the first person identified in the press release as a winner, Kevin Linden Veloso. Now, his last name is not hyphenated in the press release, but I believe that in proper convention, it should be. Unless Linden is his middle name, but I'm pretty sure it's his compound surname. Although I was unable to find a LinkedIn profile or much social media to really confirm that. But that's not really important. What is important is the content of his essay. Now, okay, so Veloso is a computer science and philosophy major at UW-Barry with Sauk County. That's in my neck of the woods. I haven't temped with him yet, but I might in the near future, depending on where he wants to take a gap year and work locally, or if he wants to transfer to some four-year campus. But okay, so right away he opens the essay. Ah, crap. My coworker slams their hand on the counter office. Well, first off, okay. There are two things that really fly in the face of traditional essay judging, and that is he used vernacular language, a euphemism for excrement, crap, and yet he somehow won. And another thing is that he improperly used a plural pronoun there as a gender catch-all for a singular noun, which should be his or her. So that's just like, wow, that's proof. At Stagwell, it changed its paradigm. It modified its judging criteria to focus less upon proper grammar and more upon ideas. So just take note of that. Okay, so moving on. Veloso rose. The tense energy fills the room. Eight people are walking towards our dock and have come to see the beauty of the Wisconsin River. As a tour guide of a local boating company, it's my job to show them that beauty while cracking a cheesy pun or two along the way. And because we're in Wisconsin. Well, yours truly palletizes cheese for a living, so I guess there's some common experience. And unfortunately for Kevin, he has some customers coming who aren't going to tip him. Unfortunately for me, I get paid a few dollars more hourly than him, and I don't rely on tips anymore. I did when I was a pizza worker, but my advancement had nothing to do with my college degree. It was just a matter of me working long enough so I could sign up for a temp agency and get placed instead of get blown off. So, at any rate, the one good thing that Kevin reveals is that he's working for a private Boeing company. He's not working for UW-Baraboo or UW Colleges. He's working for a private company, which allows him to keep his job when he graduates. Because if you're a student worker in UW, as soon as you graduate, you're out of the job. And you don't get unemployment benefits. You can try to get them, but you probably won't be approved, and that really stinks. Because most people are like, "Oh, 9 weeks of unemployment benefits. See how we set," and then you find out, "Oh, no unemployment benefits. Shucks, what am I going to do?" So the cost benefit analysis boils down to, "Well, if I quit my local job, or even make a year-round job and adjust a summer-only job to move to Madison or wherever." Campus for continuing schooling, only to end up jobless because I gave up my former job to pursue education that ultimately did not result in gainful employment. It's sad but true. It happens way too often, and the higher education hucksters are afraid to quantify that problem. Yeah, they don't want to face the issue. There's no facing the music until we have them quantify a problem. And I have an occupational outcomes petition. You can go and sign it at go.gl/SmallNBigY(BigD)SmallJ(SmallR)BigU. Sorry about the awkward syntax, but that's much shorter than the full survey or petition URL at change.org. It's occupational outcomes for college graduates. You can also Google it to find it that way. But okay, so. Oh, I don't want to spend too much time talking about inferences about Kevin's occupation, but I inferred logically that it works at Dell Ducks. And again, all this will be written in my notes, so I won't go into it much on the air here, but Okay, so the next part of his essay, as important for my purposes, is so essentially Kevin acknowledges that the foreign tourists are not going to tip him because he remembers from his multicultural studies course that people from that culture usually do not tip. So, Veloso says, we explored this clash of traditionally American practices and foreign cultures in my multicultural literature class. During my freshman year, our English professor exposed us to a whole host of American subcultures. The books we read gave us insights into their struggles, practices, and appreciation for our country's rich diversity. Well, come on, there's still no excuse for totally stiffing a tipped worker. I mean, even if they're not entirely satisfied with service. One culture's past does not determine one's cultural future, which is quite unlike how one's prior work history heavily influences the jobs one is later allowed to have. Allowed by whom? Well, by risk-intolerant hiring managers who are more or less bigoted against those least fortunate amongst college graduates, those overeducated who, by working definition, never earned more than 10 hours hourly and were never allowed official supervisory duties. So Vogel also continues, you see, I didn't actually read those books until I was an ocean away from the classrooms. I was living in a house in the Paro district of Cebu in the Philippines. This is part of a strange but important period of my life wherein I'd save up money over summer months and blast off towards a new city with intent to find myself. Oh my gosh, does this sound like a prodigal grandson or what? Okay, so in the essay, he capitalizes actually. Now, it's not an initialism. That's just a word that's capitalized to say that he's shouting the word. Well, so he did not finish the assigned reading until the course was finished. That's not the behavior of a role model. Why'd Sagler give this guy a scholarship? It's not being a role model and saying that he just ignored and blew off the coursework while he was on vacation in the tropics. And later he talks about how he was drunk in the press and all that stuff. But it's just really for trying to uplift the value of liberal arts education, it just doesn't do that. Not from my perspective, but oh man. And we only have 12 minutes left in this podcast. You know, I'm going to have to continue on Monday. I really will, because there's no way I'll get through even this one essay. I mean, I might be able to finish Veloso's essay, but I just am running out of time. And in my first month of WPR Rebuttal, I used to be able to do a two-hour show, but no, I was on a freemium model. So now that month has gone by, and that was before I even knew about SAGLA. So I couldn't even prepare to do this gala two-hour broadcast that would have befitted such a topic, because I didn't know about it. You know, that's the whole thing. It's like how many students have signed up, you know, they've enrolled for college without even knowing about the true opportunity costs. And, you know, that's why I'm really working hard at overcoming is this information gap. Because higher education hucksters know the game is rigged. You know, there are always going to be so many more students than good job opportunities. And a lot of college graduates will never be knowledge workers. It's a sad truth, and we don't know the extent of the problem because these higher education administrators have a vested interest in keeping us in the dark about that, the extent of that issue. But I must say that the Federal Reserve, within the past few years, has there are different branches of the Federal Reserve. There are 12, and at different points, different branches or offices of the Federal Reserve have released just news items, these reports that reveal consistently between 40% and maybe even 45% at some points of college graduates have been underemployed. So just remember that, is that, you know, that the tide is turning against liberal arts graduates. And, you know, when people talk about, oh, the value of a higher education has never been bigger, they're also talking about two-year degrees. Okay, higher education is a weasel word because it mixes together two-year vocational technical credentials and four-year liberal arts credentials. But the two-year credentials are becoming more salient they're returning better, you know, bang for your buck, higher financial return, because it's just you get into the workforce more quickly. And these hiring managers are, you know, at least in my experience, discriminating against people who have a lot of education, but not the professional work experience that they had tried to get in college. So it's pretty much a ridiculous zero-sum game, you know, if you shelter in academia. Do not, please, for your sake, do not shelter in academia if you're having a tough time getting jobs, because you'll just lose more time and money. Just do yourself a big favor and go to temp agency, because, man, I mean, if I would have gone to temp agency after my bachelor's, I would have saved myself a lot of heartache and just expenditures on every level, financially, emotionally, socially. You know, if I would have just gone to the temp agency right away, instead of earning my master's degree. Good grief. Back to the essay. Okay, so then Veloso talks about how he then returned to UW-Baraboo, Sauk County, as a so-called non-traditional student. Okay, what does this mean, right? Non-traditional student. Well, the most common definition that a lot of non-traditional student organizations use is you're older than 24 years. So it could be 24 years and a day. It could be 25 years and up, but you know, a lot of scholarships are for 25 years and older. So that means you're a year older than the minimum age for a non-traditional student. But like National Center for Educational Statistics goes by the 24 years and up guideline. Although alternative definitions of non-traditional student have been proposed, but in general, it's just 24 years and older. Okay, so getting back to Veloso's essay, he says, effective global citizens who can bridge the gap between borders are in high demand. Oh, man. That sounds like a weasel word. Gap between borders. Yeah. You mean like with the open borders crowd that wants all these migrants to come in and depress wages for, you know, these agricultural labor jobs. And I worked one last autumn. I did, honest to goodness. And, oh, it was just horrible. But I was just trying to build my resume, and the people cannot really communicate with me, you know. It's like, yeah, I'm a college grad, but it doesn't mean you're going to have immersive capabilities in Spanish or whatever. It doesn't mean that, okay, if someone from another culture offers you a drug and you refuse it, does that make you a culture snob? Well, if it did in my case, I don't care, because I don't do drugs, okay? I don't do any drugs beyond maybe a few cups of coffee a day and occasional aspirin. And that's it for me. I don't even drink alcohol, and I don't smoke. So, you know, if someone offers me a drug, you know, it's like, oh, it's what we do in our culture. We smoke the marijuana. Well, no, I'll be a culture snob, and I'll say, no, thank you. That's not for me. But anyways, then Kevin Lyndon Veloso continues, one great tool, this bridging of gap between borders, requires empathy, which, according to the Yale Madison professor William Cronin, one of the core tenets of a liberal arts education. So he used a really awkwardly worded sentence. I would have rephrased it to have fewer dependent clauses in there, because he pretty much wrote a run-on, but whatever. Saglow is not grading on grammatical proficiency. They couldn't really care much beyond rudimentary mechanics, so that's why the quality of the final essays is not necessarily the greatest technically. But, okay, I just have to say, this sort of thinking and ego stroking towards this Billy Cronin, what's-his-face from UW-Madison, oh, and it's our essayist references Cronin, too. And I'll take apart Cronin's conundrum in the next podcast, because I am running out of time. I have only 5 minutes remaining here, and I'll barely be able to finish the content of Veloso's essay in my rebuttal to it, but I'm going to have to do a podcast for each one, you know? And that's great, because I know I sent an email to Hannah Helwig, and she wrote back saying that, you know, she'd have to adjust her work schedule if she wanted to call in. So what I'll do is, this actually works out best for everyone, because then with this one essay per podcast timetable, then yeah, everyone will have a fair opportunity to call in, and I can have a nuanced discussion with those who want to call in, and that'd be really cool. So, okay, so finishing up Velosa's essay. While the importance of reading, philosopher Martha Nussbaum writes, stories provide us with the opportunity to live more lives than our own and to understand human problems from other people's points of view. Well, that's why I read biographies, so saith Senator JPL. If you read a life stories of successful people, then perhaps you, too, can discern how to get somewhere more financially secure. As opposed to dilly-dallying away your earliest working years in some half-coma of existential viewfinding and minimum wage Dell Ducks work, like a certain scholarship winner did. No offense intended, Kevin. I'm just making an illustration. Just starkly comparing, or rather contrasting. It doesn't take tuition. It should not take tuition to go and just go to the library, check out books pertaining to people, places, and topics that you care about, and, find ways to tie into your future occupation. You don't need a professor to do that, because all your stuff here is talking about the written works of a professor. You have not really addressed anything a professor did for you. None of the professors has given you an internship. That's why I noticed. Yeah, and all the winning essays, none of them talk about an internship or a job that a professor gave them. None of them talk about opportunities that UW gave them, because UW gave them jack squat. That's what happened. You know, the UW system is not helping these people. It's just ripping them off, and, oh, yeah, Sago gave them $2,000 each, you know, essentially go and sing the praises of the place that's ripping them off, but come on. $2,000, that's not even like a quarter of the tuition nowadays. Oh, man. Whew. Okay, so how much time we have left? Oh, we have 2.5 minutes. I'll try to fit this in. So, yeah, okay, later in the essay, Veloso shares common ground where he does talk about biographies and how he, uses biographies as kind of like a reference to his own life. And I'll pull a sociology card here, and even though it's not mentioned in his essay, I'll say it, and that is Cooley's Looking Glass Theorem, where people say that, oh, no, you should be this type of worker, or no, you cannot be that type of worker, and so on. Well, essentially, reading biographies is a way of seeing how others, looking glass under the Cooley paradigm, was more or less shaped by their own experiences and the zeitgeist. The zeitgeist being the collection of culture and historical events going on in their vicinity. So, Kevin finishes, casual readers can never experience the total immersion dialogues and deliberate reflection are called fan class. Well, no, I respectfully disagree. Now, I mean, Kevin has obviously spoken for himself, but I'm airing my view now. Carefully read through a Gerald Stanley Lee classic, The Lost Art of Reading, and I have a link to it on the recap for this podcast. You can go and read the entire work at archive.org, Lost Art of Reading. Good stuff. And then tell me whether a solitary reader cannot match the mental gymnastics of juxtaposition that a crowd of liberal arts students might muster. So then, Veloso was talking about Plato from ancient Greece and how he realized that, even the mighty Plato made logical fallacies. Well, keep in mind, dear folks, all your listeners and fans out there, that higher education administrators make many mistakes of assessment, too. They don't really know how ineffectual the programs are. But I'm running out of time. WPR rebuttal is going to be cut off by the Blog Talk Radio. So I'm going to have another podcast, okay? Again, all the notes for Veloso's essay will be on this recap, but I'm going to link to another all the podcasts. I'm going to have one page for all the podcasts. It'll be a master page for all the notes, but the next podcast will be for Bill Mulligan's essay, and it's going to be Monday, okay? Monday, July, what is it? July 4th. I'm going to have an Independence Day broadcast. 12:30. See you.